हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so page 32. The Nagapatnis continued, "At least once a master should tolerate an offense committed by his child or subject. O Supreme Peaceful Soul, you should therefore forgive our foolish husband, who did not understand who you are. O Supreme Lord, please be merciful. It is proper for the saintly to feel compassion for women like us. The serpent is about to give up his life. Please give us back our husband, who is our life and soul." Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, "The husband is indeed the life, and he should be. The husband is indeed the life, and he should be given back, in the sense of perfectly restoring his body to an unwounded condition." Well, the Lord may have questioned, when the medicinal treatment is properly applied, then the disease goes away. But in this case, in order to drive away the last traces of this disease, there still needs to be applied 7 or 8 strikes of the heel. Therefore, please give your sanction for this application. In answer to this, they speak in the verse beginning, "Anu Grinishva, please be merciful." The remaining trace of his contamination should be destroyed simply by granting the nectar of your favor, not by making him drink the bitter poison of punishment. The Nagapatnis concluded, "Now please tell us, your maidservants, what we should do. Certainly anyone who faithfully executes your order is automatically freed from all fear." Verses 54 to 67. So in here, these things are being spoken because of the faith, right? That they know that if someone who is faithful has surrendered to the Lord will take care. But it's also the Lord will take care how the Lord sees best to take care. They're just recommending he consider these things because Kaliya being their husband, and then on the external platform or the social platform, then the husband is there, then everything goes properly for them, because then they'll be properly situated. They don't have to be in anxiety about various different things, then they can do their devotional service. But still, it's up to Krishna how it's going to work. Right? So it's not just it's not that they're just asking this and they're wanting something as much as they're submitting out of compassion, seeing how much he's being afflicted, then they're asking for his mercy. Does this make some sense? So there is the element of that. The same position could be used more materially or spiritually. Does that make sense? It's just the difference of where, what angle they're taking. Yes.
For example, if we apply it in our own life, we do ask Krishna sometimes, or at least we try to see things that if Krishna's arrangement.
Yes.
But we have also we have also endeavor to do things. And for example, we do something and fails. It fails and fails over again. Should we see that something that Krishna doesn't want, so we should shift to something else?
Depends if it's your duty. If it's your duty and it's something you're supposed to do, that's recommended, then you just keep at it. If it's something that you're doing that's not means it's not opposed to your duty, but it's not specifically your duty, you're doing it because of what benefits you feel you get from it, then you might consider those things. And if it's definitely something that's not recommended, then you'd immediately think that. But if it's your duty, then you just carry on because that's what you're supposed to do. Right? You might consider maybe there's another angle that you have to look at or try, but the same thing will be there. It's just how it will be there. You know what I'm saying? So you're trying to, let's say, arrange for dinner, but you can't get the suppliers sick or this or that. You go to the shop, it's closed. You go to something else. It's not a codicil, and the Russians have bought all the buckwheat, but you were buying for a codicil. You know, stuff like this. So you just go. So then you just check and just see, what works. So you end up with, what do you have left, in the shelf there. You know what I'm saying? So, but the point is one is performing one's duty the very specific way you wanted to do it. That might change, but the principle will remain. So it's only that the principle of something won't remain if it's not actually necessary or shouldn't be done. Then you'd look at it. Does that make sense? You're doing something and. Let's say we're being very aggressive about it, and then we find out that the Shastra says better to not be so aggressive, and we're having trouble, then we can understand, okay, that's something we have to shift. Krishna's trying to tell us something. Right? But if it's something we're supposed to do, and we're trying our best and all that, and it doesn't go well, then it's just Krishna seeing how dedicated we are to doing what we do. Because things going well isn't necessarily the position in which we remember Krishna the best.
But isn't it an indication also that we
are... It can be an indication, but the main indication is, are we remembering Krishna or not? Right? Because otherwise, we look at it, did Yudhishthira Maharaj run a nice kingdom? But he lost it. So is Krishna trying to tell him that he wasn't running it so nicely? You understand? So we do our duty, and then what will happen, and that we see. That's it.
Mara, the question seems to be about the sincere devotee doing something, and he wants to just know whether he's on the right track or whether he's making a mistake or not. So Mara, is it so that the devotees can go into all this Lakshan Shastra and the Astro and the Vastu and other things, and this is the will of Krishna, which, like, for buying something, is it so?
I think you're supposed to hold your hand up with a sword when you say that one. With that, looking around to the other guys with big crosses on as they look at a camel caravan that happens to be not Christian. Well, they always hold up the sword. It's God's will. And then they, in a very confident way, go and kill everybody, though it's not.
God wills it.
Yeah. So we have to be... The point is you can check those things, but if it's your duty, then what does it matter? Does it change?
No.
You still do your duty. It's just that, okay, results may come later, but that doesn't mean you don't do anything till later. Otherwise, how do you express your service to Krishna? Or if there's another opportunity, then you may take, okay, so better now to do this, and later we'll do that. You can get into those things if you like, but the point is you still have to keep yourself engaged. Right? It's not that it going well is the only purpose we're trying to get. We're trying to get the nicest result for Krishna. But the most of the nicest result, the essence, is the devotion. Right? So it just depends upon how we're approaching this aspect. Does that make sense? So the attitude is the thing you have to see there. It means you can check these things. So if there's something you can do to make it work better, why wouldn't you? Just like if you have two pans and one works better than the other, why wouldn't you use the better one? Right? So it's not that. Okay, well, I have this pan now, it's not so good, but we have some friends coming, after 3 weeks, they're bringing a better pan, so for 3 weeks we won't cook. You know what I'm saying? You figure out something you can cook in that pan. Does that make sense? So in other words, it can be used, But at the same time, it's not that the use of it is devotional service. It's the attitude in which it's used defines whether it's devotional service or not. You know what I'm saying? Sitting down, chanting your rounds because that's the order of guru, now that's devotional service, whether you're absorbed in Krishna or not. But when you're dealing with all these indirect aspects of the aparavidya, then if you connect it to Krishna, then it becomes devotional service. If you don't, it's not. That's why the confusion comes up, like we had the other day on Varnashram. Is it's aparavidya. So if you connect it to Krishna, it becomes Daivavarnashram. It becomes devotion. It becomes devotional service. But it itself is not devotional service. So some say, Rupa Goswami says it's not devotional service, so therefore we don't have to do it. But did, did Rupa Goswami's, list getting your new phone as part of devotional service? So he didn't list that. Why are we getting? Oh, no, that's Yukta Vairagya. Why is it all these other things are Yukta Vairagya but not Varnashram? Right? If it's connected to Krishna's devotional service, but it's not inherently devotional service, not like chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, living in the Dham, worshipping Tulsi. You know, does that make sense? Hearing Bhagavatam. These are inherently devotional service. Though there are people that can even take those and mess it up and make it not devotional service. The Smartas and the Sahajiyas. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, therefore, it ultimately comes down what's the mood in which it's done. It means the actual mood, not what you say the mood is. You know what I'm saying? Because we can say anything. Is that what it is? Yeah. Verses 54 to 67. Sri Krishna pardons Kaliya and sends him away. Sugadeva Goswami said, thus praised by the Nagapatnis, the Supreme Personality of Godhead released the serpent Kaliya, who had fallen unconscious, his head's battered by the striking of the Lord's lotus feet. Right? Another 6 to 7 to go. 7 or 8. Krishna, Kaliya slowly regained his vital force and sensory functions. Then, breathing loudly and painfully, the poor serpent addressed Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in humble submission. The serpent Kaliya said, our very birth as a snake has made us envious, ignorant and constantly angry. Oh my Lord, it is so difficult for people to give up their conditioned nature by which they identify with that which is unreal. Oh Supreme Creator, it is you who generate this universe. So it's difficult to give up the conditioned nature means the attachment to it. That's the problem. It's not engaging the nature. It's giving up the attachment to the nature that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What about acting? Attachment to the nature is one thing, but you also accustomed over the years to act in a certain pattern.
That's there, but the point is that pattern being, is it useful in Krishna's service? Have you made it applied it in that way?
Not necessarily.
So then that's just habits that you have to work on. The point is if it's connected to Krishna, then it becomes useful. If it's not connected to Krishna, then it's not useful. Yes. But what I'm meaning is giving up the conditioned nature means that we don't follow the nature that the conditioning supplies. Does that make sense? Because here, what we're meaning is the conditioning is the particular body and subtle body that we're covered with. But if we're no longer covered, the soul being uncovered, the gross and subtle body still remain the same.
But that's from the liberated and above platform. What about before?
There's
that?
Something above liberated as a platform?
Krishna. No, but I mean...
No, but that's a realization. But I'm just saying that's just situation.
Yeah, but before that...
You know, why I'm saying that is that we don't give it too much credit.
But before that...
But in principle, you can understand that and start to work on that platform. It's just the point is that with the Kanista, the tendency is to be attached to working with that conditioned nature, because we got that conditioned nature because of attachment. Right? It's the natural result. The Madhyama platform, then, it's comfortable to work with it because that's what you're used to working with. But that's not a problem. But the point is you're using that to do Krishna's service. So you like working with that conditioning because that's what you have, that's what you're used to.
That's not attachment?
No, that's just, it's just a comfortable place to do things. Does that make sense? It matches. Like, where do you cook? In the kitchen. You know, because it's the natural place for it to go on. Technically, you could cook anywhere. Right? Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? That's why hotels make, have policies about cooking. Because people can cook anywhere. Right? But it's interesting to note that they only really make this very clear in cultures where they can cook anywhere. Like that. Because like if you're in England or in France or Germany, they don't mention that. But if you're in India, you're in Italy, you're in anywhere else, then they mention no cooking. Because people do. Does this make sense? It's subtle. But that's the whole point. That's what we're trying to get at, is these subtleties.
Because it's very difficult to see attachment and just comfortable to work with.
The point is who's the result for? Then that will be the comfortable. If it's for yourself, then that's attachment.
Mixed.
And if it's mixed, then it's part comfortable, part attachment.
Comfortable attachment.
Yes. Yes, I would say. Comfortably numb. Yes. Was that something?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm thinking that, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says directly to Arjuna, be detached.
Yes.
But then for ourselves, as you explained previously, sometimes we just indirectly connect our attachments.
Right.
Without giving them up, actually. Is that cheating or is that...
I mean, as with time one goes, one will start to be aware. The main point is that one's willing to give up the attachments, even if one hasn't. Then as you get purified, you'll start to see opportunities to give them up. Hmm. But if we're attached to our attachments, then even the opportunity is there, we won't see it. And so then, because we don't see it, then the symptoms of the need to give it up will start becoming more and more intense and exaggerated until the point that we maybe do make the connection. Hmm. Right? Because otherwise, if we think back, something's not going right and we're going to the wrong, there are symptoms beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, someone says something, maybe indirect, they don't even know, but you've already gotten indications. There was a feeling, there was a thought, but we don't, so it just keeps going until it starts getting more, until the bus comes along, like that. Is that so? If we're willing to give it up, even though we haven't, because the technically is we can't give it up, because it's Krishna's nature that's controlling us. So we haven't. We put ourselves in this condition by desire, but the effectiveness of it is by Krishna's energy. So, by desire, if we wish to be out of this, actually sincerely, then it's by Krishna's potency that we will be. So it's not that we're actually controlling whether we're conditioned or liberated. But, does that make sense? So we just have to be willing and like cooperate. And then it'll just disappear. You won't even notice. You know, one day you can look back and go, hey, it's like that. So that's the thing. Krishna can take so many things away if we're willing. And if we're holding on to them and screaming and, throwing tantrums, then, it sticks around a little longer. Yeah. So.
O Supreme Creator,
it is you who generate this universe, composed of the variegated arrangement of the material modes. And in the process, you manifest various kinds of personalities and species, varieties of sensory and physical strength, and varieties of mothers and fathers with variegated mentalities and forms. So Krishna, when he generates everything, he creates, he generates all these variety. And then we, by our desire, then we take. You know, it's just like, let's say, you go into a big department store, right? What do you buy in the store?
What do you need?
What you need or what you want, right? But what do you buy from? What are the options? You know, yeah. But who creates the options?
The owner.
Yes, you understand. So, in other words, we'll take it as our free will that we go into the shop and buy what we want. But you can only buy what he has available. So technically, it's not free will. You know what I'm saying? You can't go into, you know, how you say, Saks Fifth Avenue and ask for a stuffed aardvark. You know, it's not happening. It's just there's going to be that certain things can happen. So Krishna's made the material world, but he's made the variety 8,400,000, so that's better than any department. Even that, how you say, I think it takes up two blocks or something, Macy's in New York. It's like the biggest department store in the world or something. But still, they won't have 8,400,000 options. They're so smart, they don't even work when you want them to. Right? You push the buttons, they don't do it, it's just that. Yeah. You have a little thing, you know, soundproof thing, so they just put the phone in there. So Krishna creates the opportunity. So that's the whole thing, is that we choose from what's already there. But knowing, because of the modes of nature, it's understood what will be the choices. But as long as we think we're making the choice, then we think it's free will. But it's actually still controlled by the modes of nature. Right? But our desire to be involved in that process, that's our free will. So as soon as then we decide we don't want to be part of that, and just be engaged in Krishna's service, then by Krishna's grace, then slowly, the opportunities for devotional service come up, and for those attachments, they go away. But so, giving up attachment doesn't mean we don't work in the area. That was the confusion for Arjuna. Right? You know, that was his thing, is that, give up all attachments. So he said, great, I'll go to the forest. No, you're going to, you should fight. But you said, give up attachments. You know, no, but now you fight for Krishna. So that's where the confusion comes up, is we're used to the impersonal concept that if I'm giving up attachments, then there's nothing. Rather than I give up attachments means I give up my reason for being involved. And I'm only involved because it pleases Krishna. So I have a nature, I can do that. Arjuna is a warrior, therefore he can do something on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Right? Does that make sense? You know, like that. So that's the whole thing. So it's just a matter of what ability you have, what nature you have. Now you do it for Krishna rather than for ourselves. But what you're doing doesn't change unless what you're doing needs to be changed. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, among all the species within your material creation, we serpents are by nature always enraged. Being thus deluded, so they're not just angry, they're always enraged. They're just ready to bite everybody at any moment. You know, that's what they're famous for. Being thus deluded by your illusory energy, which is very difficult to give up, how can we possibly give it up on our own? Oh Lord, since you are the omniscient Lord of the universe, you are the actual cause of freedom from illusion. So that's the thing. We surrender to Krishna, then we're freed from illusion. Not that I will do this and I will make myself free. That's where we'll get frustrated. That once making that determination and all that and trying really hard, that pleases Krishna. But we have to understand it's our pleasing Krishna that is the cause of it. So if in pleasing Krishna, then we get that benefit of becoming less, and we continue on in that service attitude, even though we started thinking it's because I'm going to do this sadhana or I'm going to do this activity and that's going to free me from material entanglement, because we continue doing it for Krishna without false ego, then we will get purified and then come to the understanding that Kali is giving here. But if having done the thing we become proud that, yes, see, I'm such a good manager, a brahmachari or a grihastha, whatever it is that we think we are, and because of that, that's why we're so successful and that's why we're advancing Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will, you know, do something to adjust that attitude. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter what we start from. It's the attitude in which we continue. So that's the whole point. It doesn't matter where you start from. This idea, no, you have to give everything up and then start all over, is not actually a progressive method. The progressive method is wherever you're at, you start there. And from that you move forward, yes.
And with the time, the more you practice Krishna consciousness, the more kind of you get more refined senses.
Yes.
In a sense, because you become purified.
Yes.
And the more particular you become in many aspects of your life.
Yeah. But should it be particular for Krishna? Is it getting a better result for Krishna?
Yeah, it's more focused.
Yes, so then it's not a problem.
But can we say that it's also part of the conditioned nature?
Means, what will you be refining? What is the conditioning?
Association, food,
yes, but I'm just saying that that's still going to be according to what's the nature.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But the principle is that association by who's advanced, but it will be within those that you can relate to.
Yes.
You know, like that. And food, it'll be what you can relate to, but now you'll be making it nicer because you want it to be for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a problem that it's, that's what we mean by you can purify the nature. You can't change the nature.
So,
yeah, so then purifying the nature, then that's what we're looking for. So it's just always engaged in Krishna service, because in the spiritual world, they're going to, because of their mood, then they're going to have a form, and that naturally has particular actions. And so they'll be involved in those actions in the pastimes of the Lord. So then it's expected they'll stick to those. Because that's their mood, that's what matches. So in the material world, since we don't have our spiritual body, then we do, but we have a body, we go with that body, and how what that body is, that's what we do for Krishna. So it's the same principle. Does that make sense? Because there they're just engaging everything in Krishna's service. There, whatever they have is from their desire to please Krishna, that's why they had it. While here, everything we have is from the desire to please ourselves, that's why we've got it. But now, we can do the same principle that they do there, engage everything in Krishna's service. So it doesn't matter what its origin is, it's the point is how it's being used. Is that... Oh Lord, since you are the omniscient Lord of the universe, you are the actual cause of freedom from illusion. Please arrange for us whatever you consider proper, whether it be mercy or punishment. Right? Because he's come to this point where he understands that whatever Krishna gives, that will free us from the material entanglement. So if that's going to be in the form of mercy and kindness in that way, or it's going to be mercy and kindness in the way of punishment. So he's willing to take whatever is there. So as long as we're willing to do that, then Krishna works it out very nicely. Yes.
Sometimes we hear devotees say like that.
Right.
But actually, they don't mean it.
Yes, and Krishna knows that. He is sitting there in the heart, so he can tell what you're thinking. Okay. So that's what you have to remember, is the internal dialogue that goes on. Krishna does hear that. So one has to remember that. So, but if you mean it, then Krishna understands that. But the point is even if you are saying it, even though you don't mean it, Krishna, because of the Bhakti Vatsala, will take it take it as that's what you want and start to move you in that direction in as much as you can handle. But if that surrender is there, then you can deal with greater and move quicker. That's all. Or if that, does that make sense?
Because we see here in this pastime, from position of a demon, Kali very quickly achieved this level of Sharanagati. He's like fully surrendered.
Yes.
And then we see some neophyte devotees, they come and then they say, okay, Krishna, whatever you wish, whenever you, it's like that.
Right.
But they're obviously not that level of consciousness.
No, but still, it's taken by what's there. It's just like the child does something. They're not very expert at it, but it's taken as significant. Hmm. You know, so that's how it works. So it's... These things will come with time. The point is to be engaged in Krishna's service. If we're engaged in his service, then that's pleasing to Krishna, whatever our level of advancement. That's the point. Everybody, every living entity is qualified to serve Krishna. It's just whether they want to or not. So, because if someone's cultivated not wanting to for so long, then even the opportunity is there, they can't take it. Just because they don't have the habit or the interest. Because they've cultivated not doing that. So that's why we always have to be careful to not avoid devotional service. Otherwise we'll get good at it. The BBT purport to verse 56 states, Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that because of his wretched condition, Kali was unable to compose original prayers to the Lord, and thus he paraphrased some of the prayers offered by his wives. Okay. Yeah. So you know, he's in other words, but he's understanding it. He's not plagiarizing here. You know, but it's Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Kali has said, "My dear Lord, I am born as a serpent," right? But by his saying it again, then we get a more clear understanding, right? Because we're not necessarily as developed. So they gave very nice prayers, and then you can say a paraphrasing means you make it more streamlined, more simple, and then it makes it easier for us. So even the repetition is repeated.
It must be very embarrassing. He can't even compose his own prayers.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, is you surrender to Krishna, it doesn't matter. That's the whole thing, because these other things are material considerations, so it happens.
He's following in the footsteps. Hmm? He's following in the footsteps of his wife.
Yes. Yes. Kali has said, because they're devotees. So. "My dear Lord, I am born as a serpent. Therefore, by natural instinct, I am very angry. How is it then possible to give up my acquired nature without your mercy? It is very difficult to get out of the clutches of your maya. By your maya, we remain enslaved. My dear Lord, kindly excuse me for my inevitable material tendencies. I surrender unto you. Now you can punish me or save me as you desire." So the Prabhupada's taken those and this made it into, you know, very sweet, where we're used to. So do we see what's happened here? They've offered these big, more elaborate theories. He's given some more simplified, and then Prabhupada's just given just the essence. Right, so we're so used to Prabhupada's purport is just the essence, and it's so simple because it is just essence. We have to be careful not to make the mistake that they're just simple, and that others that give the more elaborate, that's more, because no, it's whatever they're saying is already in the purports, literally. You know, as far as the points to be gained, some particular detail and all that's there in the Acharya's purports. That's not necessary to repeat. They don't repeat it either. The Sridhar Swami said it, they don't say it. If he's alluded to something, didn't give the detail, they may give the detail if it seemed deemed important. So whoever's written the detail, it just stays at that. But the essential point, what they're all trying to make, that any of the Acharyas can then bring out so that the individuals may gain that. Yes.
Can we say that, especially Vishwanath Chakravarti and Jiva Goswami, their commentaries are quite technical. Sometimes very difficult to understand. It's because they've written it in Sanskrit and the main emphasis on that.
No, it's just they're bringing out technical points so we understand. We connect everything. So we see the physical, the metaphysical, the spiritual, all the connections. Because if we see the connections, then we can see the difference in things or see the commonality of things. Because otherwise, by what's the original statement, if we understand that, then we already understand these technical points. Or hearing the technical points, then it'll make sense. But that's what's mentioned. The residents of Vrindavan don't require the technical points to appreciate Krishna. While we have a tendency is the more technical it is, the more we appreciate it. Right? But they, it's just they have that affection for Krishna, so they're not worried about it. Is that what it says? Not that they don't understand it, they don't have to dwell on it to love Krishna. But if they dwell on a point, then they can take the technicality far beyond anybody else. You know, like we made that point, is that Ramanujacharya wrote a purport, very important, I think it was 1155. It's a very major purport. And I can't remember, it even has a name, I think, as a shloka. And so then Ramanujacharya, to really bring out all the points, wrote a 26-page purport. Like that, just to make sure that everything that's there is understood. And, you know, and because somehow the Sri scholars don't have a problem reading Gaudiya literature. Because I think, because of the Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, they see that they have more, you know, very fine points than that. They may not read, you know, Madhvacharya's commentaries, but they do read, you know, Gaudiya. And so then one scholar commenting on Prabhupada's purport, because Prabhupada only writes half a page. And so we would think, oh, Prabhupada just gives something simple and half a page, but Ramanuja has written 26 pages, so now this is something, you know, significant. But the scholar said that what Ramanujacharya wrote in 26 pages, Srila Prabhupada has given that essence and the conclusion of that in half a page. So he was impressed. He was saying, this is scholarship. You know, because Ramanuja is a scholar, and no one, you know, can come up to his standard, but he's just pointing out that Prabhupada, his scholar, is even taking it a step further. So we get used to this, so then we think, oh, they're very simple. And as it mentions, people who are cunning and devious, then they use that as, oh, Prabhupada's just giving basic things, you come, our guru's giving so much more, and this and that. And people believe it. Right? But the point is no. As you see, that's why, that's the whole point of this study, this and then studying the other literatures that go with it, is to see that whatever is there in the Vedic literatures, and the essence of that, that's all in Prabhupada's books. That's actually the point of this parallel study, is that we see it's all there. So we can refer to these technical points, but in context of how Prabhupada gave, because many can study the technical points, but when they speak them, they sound like those technical points. They're unable to say it in an essential form or a simple form like Prabhupada gives it. So that's a weakness.
That's what we call expert and master.
Yes. So the point is they'll be expert on one level, but they think that they're quite expert, more than Prabhupada. At that point, they just lose their value. Sukadev Goswami said, after hearing Kaliya's words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was acting the role of a human being, replied, O serpent, you may not remain here any longer. Go back to the ocean immediately, accompanied by your retinue of children, wives, and other relatives and friends. Let this river be enjoyed by the cows and humans. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though difficult for the Brahma or Shiva toes. Okay. Though difficult for Brahma or Shiva to do, Krishna was able to punish Kaliya just by using a human form, Karya Manushaha, right? While they're using demigod forms. He did not hold his Shankha and Chakra for this act. Karya can also mean pastime. Thus, Karya Manushaha can mean he who takes a form of a human for performing sweet pastimes. Karya Manusha said, okay, you must go from here along with your children and wives to the ocean, because the cows and coward men use this Yamuna River with its water and banks filled with grass, leaves, and fruits. Right? So as with him there, then the banks don't have a whole lot of grass, leaves, or fruits. Right? So by him going, then it'll become very nice and everything there. So he has dealt badly, but, you know, Krishna's giving him his mercy, and then we see with time that it all works out. know, just like Ashwatthama, you know, he behaved badly, so then there's some adjustment, but then I think it's either the next Kali Yuga or the one after. Oh, I think it's the next Kali Yuga. He'll be the Vyasadeva. Like that. Is it Parasara who is the one before last? Yeah, I know there's one where there's a skip. It skips, yeah. Okay. So it means then he'll come back to natural, you know, being in the association of devotees. Sri Krishna said, if a mortal being attentively remembers my command to you to leave Vrindavan and go to the ocean and narrates this account at sunrise and sunset, he will never be afraid of you. Footnote 12. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes that because of the statement, you will no longer have fear of snakes, this verse should be considered a mantra to ward, I guess, off snake bites. Yeah, so this is three verses, so that verse, if you chant that, then yes. You can also, by remembering Ananta Sesh, then they'll go away, like that. So, remember Astika, like that. Remember Krishna, so many ways. Get up and run, right? Yes. Yeah, remember Krishna and run. Then they don't follow you, right?
Make sure.
Because these guys can fly. That's the point. You know, so you're not going to run away. If one bathes in this place of my pastimes and offers water of this lake to the demigods and other worshipable personalities, or if one observes a fast and duly worships and remembers me, he is sure to become free from all sinful reactions. Out of fear of Garuda, you left Ramanaka Island and came to take shelter of this lake. But because you are now marked with my footprints, Garuda will no longer try to eat you. Now, you would get the idea that he was on Ramanaka Island. And then, because he didn't behave properly, Garuda got upset. Then he left there, came to the Jamuna, and now Krishna is sending him back. And since he is in... where is that place? Fiji. Then one would wonder if that's Ramanaka Island. Okay.
Garuda's not going there.
He won't eat him.
Relative?
I mean, anyone connected to him. Yes, there's other relatives and friends. Like that. He's generally, when you say relatives, it includes the mother-in-law. You don't have to. But if you're thinking otherwise, then because he didn't mention specifically. Then.
Good point.
Yes. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued. My dear King, having been released by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose activities are wonderful, Kaliya joined his wives in worshipping him with great joy and reverence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the inhabitants of Braja were saved from Kaliya, and Kaliya was saved from Garuda. In this way, there was a great benefit for those who were afflicted by violence, and for he who committed violence. This is the greatness of Krishna's action, Adbhuta Karmana. So, then, one is freed from committing violence, one is freed from being violence committed towards yourself. So he's freed from Garuda, attacking him, but he's also freed from his improper behavior with others. So devotional service again corrects all that. Otherwise, if you're trying to do it on the mundane platform, it's not going to work out, because how do you change the nature? Right? Garuda is able to, now because of his surrender to Krishna, Garuda won't bother him. And because of his surrender to Krishna, he's not going to give trouble to others. Right? So how did he overcome that conditioned nature? Only by devotional service. Right? So there is no mundane method to do this. So that's why I'm saying before, the material retribution does not actually purify anyone. Right? It doesn't purify the one applying, it doesn't purify the one getting it, it doesn't purify the ones who want it done. It means purifying the way of that they can take up devotional service, that they become more qualified for devotional service. It's said if somebody has done something wrong and is punished by the government, they become purified. But if the government punishes someone who hasn't done something wrong or punishes with the wrong punishment, then that punishment reacts back on the government or whoever the authority is. So we can see as you're dealing with a very dangerous thing called devotional service, then it works out very nicely for everybody. So that's the only real solution. Right? But we see if there needs to be an adjustment, there can be. But the point is he still has that nice association and everything else. And freedom from fear. It means his situation is now stable. Right? Not that he's done something wrong, so at any time we like, then we can make his situation unstable again. Right? No. Things have been dealt with, adjudicated, it's finished. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Kaliya worshipped the Lord of the universe by offering him fine garments, along with necklaces, jewels, and other valuable ornaments, wonderful scents, ointments, and a large garland of lotus flowers. Having thus pleased the Lord, whose flag is marked with the emblem of Garuda, Kaliya felt satisfied. Receiving the Lord's permission to leave, Kaliya circumambulated him and offered him obeisances. Then, taking his wives, friends, and children, he went to his island in the sea. The very moment Kaliya left, the Jumuna was immediately restored to her original condition, free from poison and full of nectarian water. This happened by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was manifesting a human-like form to enjoy his pastimes. Footnote 13. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 66 to 67 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, The Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So here, as you see, in a human-like way, he took care of Kaliya. But then, by his desire, he cleaned up the Jamuna. So it's just whatever pleases him in that way, because then this then was something, it's an amazing, amazing thing. But then now for him to get down there and do this and that and get out buckets and those black plastic trash bags and then, you know, have a meeting to get all the people to come down to the beach and clean up and do all that kind of stuff. He didn't have to do that. In a sense, just by his desire, it was back to normal, because that's the nice facilities. Because why did he want it clean in that? Because then the cows, the cowherd men, the cowherd boys, everybody could use it very nicely. So now it can be used nicely for Krishna. So simply by his desire, it's so whatever pleases him, that is prayojana. So, and him being independent, then it'll work out how he likes it to work out. The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented extensively on this verse. To explain the word mani bihi, Kaliya worshipped the Lord with jewels, the Acharya has quoted from the Sri Radha Krishna Ganodash Deepika by Rupa Goswami as follows. Kastubha kyo manir yena pravishya hridam aur ragam Kaliya priyasi vrinda Haster Atmo Paha Ritaha. The Lord made his Kastuba gem enter the serpent's lake, and then he arranged for it to be presented to himself by the hands of Kaliya's wives. In other words, because Lord Krishna wanted to act just like an ordinary human being, he made the transcendental Kastuba gem invisible and caused it to enter within Kaliya's treasury. Then, when the appropriate moment came for Kaliya to worship the Lord with many different jewels and ornaments, the serpent's wives, unaware of the Lord's transcendental trick, presented him with the Kustuba gem, thinking it was simply one of the jewels in their possession. Right? So we see is that he's getting all these different things from different places. His shank, his club, all these different, so different personalities than they're giving, you know, in a matter of service and everything like that. And so then, you know, that makes for his pastimes. But otherwise, he's eternally in his possession and service, but just for the pastimes of this, like that.
self-interested, then they will not, when they see the Krishna, they will not give all that. Something nice, let's keep it around.
Yeah. But because they're purified, then they'll give it. Yeah, let's get some. No, that one. Yeah, and they come out without the jewel. Krishna calls over Yogamaya. Okay. The Acharya has further commented that the reason Lord Krishna is described in this verse as Garuda Dvaja, he whose flag is marked by the symbol of his carrier, Garuda, is that Kaliya also desired to become Lord Krishna's carrier. Garuda and the serpents are originally related as brothers, and therefore Kaliya wanted to indicate to Lord Krishna, if you ever have to go to a distant place, you should also think of me as your personal carrier. I am the servant of your servant, and in the wink of an eye, I can travel hundreds of millions of yojanas, right? Because these are, they're celestial snakes, so they have the mystic power. They can do all this. It's not a problem for them. Thus, the Puranas narrate that in the course of Lord Krishna's eternal cycle of pastimes, when Kamsa orders the Lord to come to Mathura, he sometimes goes there mounted upon Kaliya. Like that. Yes, because, yeah. So these are the pastimes you see. Yeah, means I think Brihad Bhagavatamrita mentions these. Okay. Chapter 17: The History of Kaliya. Pratigya. When a saintly personality intends to bestow mercy to others, but inadvertently commits an offense to a Vaishnav, the result of his so-called mercy becomes greatly detrimental to both him and to those he's attempting to benefit. Right? So, in other words, misplaced compassion. This is a very important point because as far as, you know, it's one of the qualities of Krishna. We see his Lord Chaitanya, that compassion, that audarya. Its origin, you see there, I mean, of course, the origin is him, but where you see it's a very natural quality is this one of the qualities of the gopis, that they have that mood of audarya. When the gopis, they have 20 ornaments, right? So one of those ornaments is audarya. So all these different things are there. So it's there, but so then in the modern context, so being compassionate, that's considered something very great, and people appreciate that. But at this point, it's being brought out that if you're compassionate without Krishna consciousness, then the problem is it doesn't actually, it's not actual compassion, because it will simply further material entanglement. It doesn't mean if it's not the duty in the culture that you shouldn't be involved in it, but you shouldn't think that compassion is what makes Krishna consciousness. It's Krishna consciousness that makes Krishna consciousness. So if compassion is implied connected to Krishna consciousness, right, then that's there. Yes.
He always said that this desire to be compassionate, or at least the sentiment, comes from the friend.
Yes, friend, it will come from that. Now, just being compassionate to someone who's having trouble, that's a natural thing. And so that's not a problem. But when it inadvertently commits an offense to Vaishnavas, in other words, our application of it then has an aspect that is going against something in devotional service, that's then where the compassion has a problem. Does that make sense? But if it's just you see something and you try to help, then that's just natural that one does, because they're all living entities that are connected to Krishna, so therefore you're trying to help. But if in doing that it gets in the way of proper devotional service or the proper understanding, then one has to be careful. So one has to see is that so-called compassion may cause problem later. You know, like that story of the
Sovereign Rishi, when he was meditating.
Well, isn't that coming up? That's not part of this. Oh, it's connected with Garuda. But yes, that's the same position. He's here in this chapter? Yeah.
Yeah, he's here.
Yeah. So yes. So the example will be given. That's what it's about. But what I was mentioning is Prabhupada tells a story of that boy, and then I think his parents died, so he grew up with his aunt, but his aunt, because she was so feeling sad that, you know, he's an orphan and this and that, then she was always just kind to him, and never corrected him when he was wrong. Right? And so that didn't work out at the end. That's the meaning. If the compassion is not progressive, then it's not actually going to work out as compassion in the long run. So the thing is, we have to see that it's going to be appropriate all the way through. Yes.
For us, showing compassion to the people means preaching.
Yes.
So we've seen that, you know, preachers, they have that part very developed.
Yes.
But mundane compassion, they don't really care. Is yes. that a fault?
It is a fault. It is a fault. Because if there's something that's ordinary, you just, it's like it's, you don't, what is it? I think it's one of the 64 items to not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. You know, so it's just, if there's something there that would be just a natural thing to do, then it's just done. It's not, you know, like I say, the big preacher after his program is going across the street and there's, you know, some old lady who can't get across the street, he helps her across the street. Not that, oh, this is Maya. The point is it's all, they're also Krishna's devotee, they just don't know it. You know, so the idea is that the culture is there also. That's the point, is that we have the philosophy, but what covers this aspect of compassion is religion. But now if we practice religion without Krishna consciousness, without the philosophy, that's sentiment. That's then what's being spoken about in this chapter. And if we have philosophy without religion, it'll have that mental speculation. So then, now, when they get back to the ashram, then the brahmacharis can argue easily for hours, if not days, or, you know, until something else important comes up, you know, about, you know, if that was real compassion, or if that was Maya, or this or that, you know, over that old lady. Because there's mental speculation. Because the religion is not there. Right? Because brahmachari is a servant, so therefore why wouldn't he help? Right? And the first thing they do is learn respect. So this is somebody of greater age, so therefore then you can help. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just an ordinary thing. But if it comes down to, okay, are you going to give the lecture or are you going to be helping the old ladies across the street? You get someone else to help them across the street and go give the lecture. Chapter 17 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikshit. Okay. You're going not because we said something. Is okay. Okay. Just every day you go out, did I say something? What's wrong with helping old ladies?
I'm not against that.
Okay.
There's an old lady that he forgot to help.
Okay, yes. Maharaj Parikshit asks Srila Sukadeva Goswami question 10:15 of Srimad Bhagavatam from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:17:1. King Parikshit inquired, why did Kaliya leave Ramanaka Island, the abode of the serpents, and why did Garuda become so antagonistic towards him alone? Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers this question in the first half of this chapter. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Kaliya left the island of the snakes and how the sleeping residents of Vrindavan were saved from a forest fire. When King Parikshit inquired about Kaliya's leaving Ramanaka Island, the abode of the serpents, and about why Garuda acted inimically towards him, Sri Sukadeva Goswami replied as follows. All the serpents on the island were afraid of being devoured by Garuda. To placate him, every month they would leave various offerings for him at the foot of a banyan tree. But Kaliya, puffed up as he was with false pride, would eat those offerings himself. Hearing of this, Garuda became furious and went to kill Kaliya, whereupon the snake began biting the great bird. Garuda fiercely beat him with his wing, sending Kaliya fleeing for his life to a lake adjoining the Jamuna River. Prior to the above incident, Garuda had once come to the Jamuna and started eating some fish. Sabari Rishi had tried to stop him, but Garuda, agitated by hunger, had refused to heed the sage's prohibitions. And in response, the sage had cursed Garuda that if he ever came there again, he would immediately die. Kaliya had heard of this, and thus he lived there without fear. So it's all connected. In the end, however, he was driven out by Sri Krishna. Right? Because it's not that Saubari has done it at that devotional aspect. Right? When Lord Balaram and all the residents of Vrindavan saw Sri Krishna rise up out of the lake, beautifully decorated with many different gems and ornaments, right? Because they all gave him all nice things. They embraced him in great pleasure. The spiritual masters, priests, and learned Brahmins then told Nanda Maharaj, the king of the cowherds, that although his son had been caught in the grips of Kaliya, it was by the king's good fortune that he was now free again. Because the people of Vrindavan were quite worn out by hunger, thirst, and fatigue, they spent that night on the banks of the Jamuna. In the middle of the night, a fire happened to blaze up within the forest, which had become dry during the hot season. As the fire surrounded the sleeping inhabitants of Vrindavan, they suddenly awoke and rushed to Sri Krishna for protection. Then the unlimitedly powerful Lord Sri Krishna, seeing his dear relatives and friends so distressed, immediately swallowed up the terrible forest fire. Shloka Anusharana, verses 1 to 12, the history of Kaliya. 13 to 20, the conclusion of the Kaliya Dhamana Leela. 21 to 25, Sri Krishna swallows the forest fire. Verses 1 to 12, the history of Kaliya. Having thus heard how Lord Krishna chastised Kaliya, King Parikit inquired, why did Kaliya leave Ramanaka Island, the abode of the servants, and why did Garuda become so antagonistic towards him alone? Sukadeva Goswami said, to avoid being eaten by Garuda, the serpents had previously made an arrangement with him whereby they would each make a monthly offering of a tribute at the base of a tree. Thus, every month on schedule, O mighty armed king, each serpent would duly make his offering to that powerful carrier Vishnu as a purchase of protection. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, Sukadeva Goswami informed the king that the island known as Nagalaya was inhabited by serpents and that Kaliya was one of the chief serpents there. Being accustomed to eating snakes, Garuda used to come to this island and kill many serpents at will. Some of them he actually ate, but some were unnecessarily killed. The reptile society became so disturbed that their leader, Vasuki, appealed to Lord Brahma for protection. Lord Brahma made an arrangement which Garuda would not create a disturbance. On each half-moon day, the reptile community would offer a serpent to Garuda. The serpent was to be kept underneath the tree as a sacrificial offering to Garuda. Garuda was satisfied with his offering, and therefore he did not disturb any other serpents. Footnote 14. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions that the sacrificial offering may have been an elaborate presentation of fruits and roots. Sukadeva Goswami continued, right? Because it would have to be elaborate. You can't just, you know, put one banana there or something. It has to be something elaborate because it's saving their lives. So they should put in some effort, right? They should make it sincere. Right? Like that. Sukadeva Goswami continued, although all the other serpents were dutifully making offerings to Garuda, one serpent, the arrogant Kaliya, son of Kadru, would eat all those offerings before Garuda could claim them. Thus Kaliya directly defied the carrier of Lord Vishnu. O king, the greatly powerful Garuda, who is very dear to the Supreme Lord, became angry when he heard of this. Desiring to kill Kaliya, he rushed towards the serpent with tremendous speed. As Garuda swiftly fell upon him, Kaliya, who had the weapon of poison, raised his numerous heads to a counterattack, showing his ferocious tongues and expanding his horrible eyes. Kaliya then bit Garuda with the weapons of his fangs. The angry son of Tarksha moved with overwhelming speed in repelling Krishna's attack. That terribly powerful carrier of Lord Madhusudana struck the son of Kadru with his left wing, which shone like gold. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, with the left wing indicates acting neglectfully, just like Krishna raised Govardhan Hill with his left hand, and of the left hand, his little finger of the left hand, just to show complete disregard to Indra. Right? Like that. So we see this also, I think it was when Dhritarasura, when Indra threw his club, he just caught it with his left hand. you know, not even the whole hand. I think it was just, you know, his, you know, finger and you know, thumb, just, you know, just grabbed it. And then like that, then used it to whack Indra and his carrier and knock them back. So it's a standard for those who are very powerful, and then the persons who they're dealing with aren't acting properly, then they'll do this. If they're less powerful but they're acting properly, then they'll never be disrespectful. Right? But if they're acting improperly, like Kali here is acting improperly. He's not following the etiquette. And Indra is acting improperly because Vishnu told him to use the thunderbolt. But out of his own not having that faith, then he used his club. Right? So one can't do these things. One has to have the faith, right? Otherwise, it, like we see with other great personalities like Moses, it didn't work out good for him. Right? So you have to have faith. Right? Garuda struck Kaliya with his wing rather than actually killing him. The reason for which is stated by the word Kadru Sutam, meaning that this was on account of their being brothers, because Kadru is due respect, or she deserves compassion. Right? So, he's coming there as a matter of the element of food, and that's one thing. But it's the element of fighting. Then he's considering, you know, he's a cousin brother. Right?
But eating his cousin brothers, it's okay.
That's another thing. He's a bird, and there are snakes, and then what do you do? Yeah. Sukadev Goswami continued. Beaten by Garuda's wing, Kaliya was extremely distraught, and thus he took shelter of a lake adjoining the river Jamuna. Garuda could not enter this lake. Indeed, he could not even approach it. In that very lake, Garuda had once desired to eat a fish being. What's a fish being? Oh, it's a very it's a someone who's very attached to gossiping, like that. In Bengali, they call that fish. You know, when somebody's talking gossip, fish. You know, so in other words, he wanted to eat a Bengali. Okay. Yeah, okay. The music, they're more gentle, you know, more gentle in that. You know, the Punjabis would be kind of tough and sinewy, and Bengalis would be very, you know, soft and gentle. Yeah. Okay. After all, his normal, he once desired to eat a fish being, after all, his normal food. Although forbidden by the sage Saubari, who was meditating there within the water, Garuda took courage and, feeling hungry, seized the fish. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, it is to be understood that this pastime with Saubari Muni took place before even 24th cycle of four ages, right? Because this is the 28th, so this is before the 24th. When the ancestor of Sri Raghunath, Sri Mandata Maharaj, was ruling the earth, for a long time Garuda wanted to eat. If it is objected that still the words of a sage should be respected, the words beginning Shuditaha, feeling hunger, are spoken in reply. This is because it is nowhere stated in the Smritis that it is a fault for those who are suffering the pangs of hunger to eat even that which is not fit for eating. In this way, it is refuted that there was any offense on the part of Garuda, but rather, on the other hand, the offense was that of the sage, because he had tried to obstruct a hungry great soul from eating his proper food. Right, so eating the fish is Garuda's food, and he's hungry. So he had forbidden him to eat, and then he saw he's eating anyway. Then he looked at it, this is his food, and he's very hungry. Because otherwise, why would Garuda not, you know, make that consideration? Because if he wasn't that hungry, he could go somewhere else, then why not? But since he did, he still then took it that I've spoken this, why is he disregarding? So he being a sage, then, you know, so he's not taking the devotional position of Garuda. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, Saubari committed two offenses against the great devotee, Garuda, by giving his superior an order not to eat the fish and by preventing Garuda's happiness. Garuda disobeyed Salpari's order and committed violence by eating the fish. But this was not an offense because Garuda was superior to Salpari.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He was just doing what he normally does. So why was Salpari getting in the way? So it was a sentimental attachment, you know, compassion for the fish that got in, that created problem for Salpari. So that's what we're meaning, is that one can't allow sentiment to get in the way of the proper dealings with devotees. Right? One's own personal sentiment. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, although Garuda was not under anyone's order, being the carrier of Lord Vishnu, he did not disobey the order of the great yogi. Instead of staying and eating many fish, he carried off one big fish. So it probably said he'd be big fish, not the fish. Either I was a very large Bengali. Right? So, because he told him, don't stay here and eat fish, he would just come and catch so many fish as he liked. But because he said, don't do this, then he thought, okay, I'll just, in following his order, I'll take one big fish and then leave. Right? You know, yeah. Instead of staying and eating many fish, he carried off one big fish who was their leader. Salbari Muni was sorry that one of the leaders of the fish was taken away by Garuda, and thinking of their protection, he cursed Garuda. Sukadeva Goswami continued, seeing how the unfortunate fish in that lake had become most unhappy at the death. Fish in plural here. Okay. Seeing how the unfortunate fish in that lake had become most unhappy at the death of their leader, Salbari uttered the following curse on the impression that he was mercifully acting for the benefit of the lake's residents. Right. So, this is then how we have to see these acharyas. We see up to this point, have they ever not shown us what's the transcendental vision? Right. What is Krishna conscious? What's the appropriate way to act? So then, when he specifically says that he thought that he was under the impression that he was being mercifully acting, means that they're pointing out he wasn't. Because how is it that cursing the great Vaishnav is to the benefit of the fish? Especially if they're eaten by the great Vaishnav, then they would be liberated. Right? Now they just stay as fish. Right? So what has he actually done? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, this verse describes the third offense to Garuda. Though Salbari showed mercy to the fish, he showed anger towards Garuda. He wanted to benefit the fish, but his actions had the opposite effect. By the entrance of Kaliya, the situation for the fish became worse. Right? So that's the whole point. We think we're doing compassion, it'll just get worse. That's the whole point. That's why mundane compassion doesn't actually have any real benefit. That's why mundane welfare we're not interested in. So if that welfare can be done in connection with Krishna consciousness, then that's a benefit. But if it's just welfare for welfare's sake, it actually won't do any real benefit. That the mercy shown by great offenders gives opposite results is illustrated in this verse. Salbari Muni said, if Garuda ever again enters this lake and eats the fish here, he will immediately lose his life. What I am saying is the truth. Srila Sanatan Goswami comments, the word aham is spoken out of false pride in the strength of his austerities, and so on. Right? Because he's done austerities. Now when you make a curse, the power potency of your austerities goes into the curse. Otherwise, why does it work? Right? That's why common people say things and nothing happens, because where's the potency? But sometimes people say something and something happens because there's some potency from previous austerity. Right? But it burns up. It's not that it just stays. You perform the austerity, you use it in a curse or use it for sense gratification or mystic power, it gets used up. It's like money. You have money by working the austerity, and then you spend it on things or gamble it or just are neglectful and lose it. Then it's gone. The word aham is spoken out of false pride in the strength of his austerities, and so on. By this very offense against the transcendental Vaishnava was reaped the fruit of such great misfortune as the ruination of all his accumulated austerity. Right? Because here, what is Garuda's position? He's technically not limited. So, and what will be Salbari Muni's austerities? Will they be unlimited? No, because they're material. They're not spiritual. Therefore, to try to affect this, it will use up all the potency of his austerities. That's why then one doesn't mess with the Vaishnavas. It's just you don't do that. As is described in the ninth canto, right? Because then we heard theirs. Then after that, he got disturbed. He went out of the lake. He went back to Mandata. How you say the King Mandata? That's why it said it had to be before that, because that's when King Mandata was ruling, and asked for his daughter. And then after how you say great laughter in the hall and all that. Then you know, like that. Then he made some other arrangements. I guess he had a little bit of piety left, so he used that to, transform himself, you know, so he looked a little bit better than he was looking when he walked into the hall, and, like that. Furthermore, even though he was thinking with the idea of benefiting those who were living there, just the opposite occurred. Right, so Garuda's coming there, so Kaliya would not come there. But now that Garuda doesn't come there, that's known. Right, time, things get around in time. Then he comes there. And so they become an enemy of Garuda, but then Garuda, the one who Garuda is inimical towards, then comes and becomes their enemy. Right, so Garuda was it was better when it was worse. Right. By Kali is taking up. Furthermore, even though he was thinking with the idea of benefiting those who were living there, just the opposite occurred. By Kali is taking up residence there, there resulted the death of not only the creatures living in the water, but also the trees and so on living on the shore of the Tirtha, that Tirtha, as well as the birds and other living beings who are traveling above it. Right, so just. It's not that a few fishes that he happened to come by that time and catch. It was that all of them and everything else around was destroyed. So it becomes not even a nice place. So when there's Vaishnava Aparad, it destroys the place even. Like we see with Ramachandra. Huh? The whole village becomes destroyed. It was only by the glory of taking shelter of the Jamuna in Sri Vrindavan, by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that very quickly this offense gave its immediate result, by which Shalbari engaged in sense gratification, for which for those who are discriminating is equal to hell, and by which suffering that fruit was subsequently overcome. So by taking shelter of the Jamuna in Vrindavan, then the curse goes much quicker. Otherwise, it would have been, just a more mild like anywhere else. But this, everything went very fast. And so then Shalbari Muni lost his position very quickly. So for someone in that position, then for him to then take up a life of sense gratification, then that was not at all an ideal position. Because he's a sage and living in the water because he wants to be peaceful and he's comfortable with that. So now he has to take up where he has to deal, where things are not as comfortable as before, right? Does that make sense? Because I think he married, 50 daughters?
50.
Yeah, so that's going to be trouble. That's really going to be trouble. Sukadeva Goswami continued, of all the serpents, only Kaliya came to know of this affair, and in fear of Garuda, he took up residence in that Jamuna lake. Later, Lord Krishna drove him out. Verses 13 to 20, the conclusion of the Kaliya Damana Lila. Resuming his description of Krishna's chastisement of Kaliya, Sukadeva Goswami continued, Krishna rose up out of the lake, right, because he asked that question, so then this point was made, and then it goes back to the main conversation. Resuming his description of Krishna's chastisement of Kaliya, Sukadeva Goswami continued, Krishna rose up out of the lake wearing divine garlands, fragrances, and garments, covered with many fine jewels and decorated with gold. When the cowherds saw him, they all stood up immediately, just like an unconscious person's senses coming back to life. Filled with great joy, they affectionately embraced him, having regain their vital functions. Jashoda, Rohini, Nanda, and all the other cowherd women and men went up to Krishna. O descendant of Kuru, even the dried up trees came back to life. Right, so everybody was so happy, and by Krishna's grace, everything came back. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Mother Jashoda, with great happiness, disregarding embarrassment or fear of elders, with choked voice said, "My son has been saved." Behind her, in a tight crowd, were her close friends, among them the chief, Rohini. Behind her was Nanda, impatient with delay, without his normal gravity as his love increased, who had made his way through the throng of women. Behind them were other elder cowherd men and women. Cha indicates that the young girls, such as Radha, who were developing attachment to Krishna, glanced upon him from a distance, having been saved from death, which they had desired. Now they return to life. So then they're all moving forward. So Mother Jashoda, not thinking about other elders, she just moved forward first. Then immediately then were all her friends. And then behind that others, and Nanda Baba, being impatient, pushed through all of them to come up. So he was just behind Mother Jashoda. Shukadeva Goswami continued. Lord Balaram embraced his infallible brother and laughed, knowing well the extent of Krishna's potencies. Right? Because it was just an amazing pastime how he performed it. So then Balaram is just laughed. This is not one of those, you know, holding your stomach rolling on the ground. Say, you know, laugh at happiness and, you know, that you understand what's going on, that kind of, you know. Out of great feelings of love, Balaram lifted Krishna up on his lap and repeatedly looked at him. The cows, bulls, and young female calves also achieved the highest pleasure. Srila Sanatan Goswami comments. But why did he laugh? That is replied to. He who knows the power, the variegated opulences of that achuta, since it is implied, even he himself, the progenitor of the Rudra, who manifests the fire of annihilation, is insignificant in comparison to him. And because thus he is remembering how Lord Krishna, possessing such opulent power, was enveloped by the petty... He is remembering how Lord Krishna, possessing such opulent power, was enveloped by the petty serpent Kaliya, right? So even though Kaliya couldn't do, it's a pastime. So just he's remembering all this. And he's remembering that he's the source of Rudra. Remembers that we never found that word, right? That Rupa Goswami mentions, that it's a quality of Balaram that is there, but he doesn't manifest it. Is that he has the nature to deal with the external energy or with the element of the creation. So you only see that in Mahavishnu. So in Mahavishnu, then it's manifest. But it's inherent in Balaram. Right? Does that make sense? So here, then he's mentioned the progenitor of the Rudra, because that's the whole point, is that Sadashiva, that's the aspect of the material world. Hiranyagarbha, in the Hiranyagarbha Shukta, the prayers to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, then in the form of the Virat, I mean, as, you know, having the, being the source of the Virat Rup, is then offered prayers, but the prayers are said in the form that it appears that it's a prayer to Shiva. Same with the Virupaksha Japa. So many would take these as prayers to Shiva, but they're not. They're actually prayers to Vishnu, because he's the maintainer, creator, and destroyer. So all these three aspects are there. So if some of the prayers then have that aspect of Shiva, that's because he's the source of Shiva. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, Balaram smiled, "You have done just the right thing." End quote. Although he was knowledgeable of Krishna's strength, he looked at him intently again and again. Udaik Shata. He looked to see if Krishna had incurred any injuries from fighting Kaliya. Right? Because the injuries would be there by his desire. But he's checking to see if they would be there anyway, because then it's an opportunity to render service. Sukadeva Goswami continued. All the respectable brahmanas, together with their wives, came forward to greet Nandamarsh. They said to him, right, because the brahmanas and all that are there, but Mother Jashoda just rushed forward. right, without any formality. And no one's going to worry about that. One, Krishna is the center of everybody's attention, but at the same time as being her son. Then if the mother rushes forward, then others don't complain, even though it may or may not be proper etiquette, but it's one of those things that no one gets upset about.
So we see here in the other Vrindavan pastimes that touch of majesty actually what distinguishes, you know, Krishna Lila from the Pativaras. Because then otherwise it's very, you know, it's very easy to mistake. Pativa means the mundane.
Okay, mundane, yes. Yeah, I just wasn't getting the context for the Pativa. Sorry.
Because then, you know, it's like, you know, human pastimes means that's how human deal.
Yes.
But then what Krishna did, it's beyond human.
Yes, but it's done in the human fashion.
Yeah.
That's the specialness, because the demigods do things as demigods. They don't do things as humans. So then Krishna is doing something as a human, but something that is so special. But that's what makes it so sweet. That's the sweetness, because the majesty is just done as God, so that's why it maintains the majesty. But here, even though it's the same kind of opulence as being applied, but because it's done in the human context, therefore it takes on the sweetness. So it's just about taste. So it's not that he can't do these things, but they're only because they enhance the taste. If it doesn't enhance the taste, he doesn't do it.
So actually, can we say that blend of Aishwarya and Madhurya, what makes Krishna Lila so special? Because he does as a human, but that is...
You could, but you'd have to be a little careful, because then one would say is that Dwarka has a mix of that sweetness and Aishwarya, because they go back and forth.
Right.
But in Braj, the two are there at once. Because in Dwarka, when majesty comes up, they click into majesty mode.
Right.
And then he has to bring in Yoga Mayak again to get them to go back into sweetness.
Yeah.
But in Braj, if the opulence comes up, then it doesn't change their rasa.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The flavor stays the same. You know, they may become bewildered, or the cowherd boys, they just go, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, how boys do and stuff. You know, it just goes on. So in that way, you wouldn't technically use the term majesty. You would use the term just opulence, because majesty means a grand manifestation or show of opulences. But here, the opulences are done, but because they're done in the human form, doesn't take on that grandeur, though it may be much greater than a grand display.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it maintains the sweetness. So I would be careful in explaining it like that, of using those two terms together, because that will then take on the nature more of Dwarka. You know what I'm saying? So even though that's what it is, but it's just like synonyms.
Yeah.
Right? Because one synonym will bring out one aspect, another will bring out another. So is that here? Because otherwise, because it will click to the mind, people may take that, devotees may take that, and then start pushing that point, just because it clicked to them. Because it's easier to understand. Dwarka is easier to understand than Braj, because it's this or that. It's like dwait adwait.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So it's easier to understand. So that's the whole point, is those other four, those are practiced in Vaikuntha. Only Achintaveda Veda Tattva is practiced in Braj. Even Nimbarka's, even in this Dwait Adwait, is still an aspect of lower Goloka. It's not Braj. Even though it's Vrindavan pastimes. It doesn't have, because they can't deal with the simultaneous. Right? They can't deal with these aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so you have to be careful, otherwise they'll catch that. And then, like now and again, let's say, a senior preacher will be explaining something, devotees don't catch it, and then he'll bring it into terms that they can catch it. But then it starts to become being explained in that way, which is then out of context, and then when they bump into some other explanation, then it will the terms will contradict and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one has to be careful about that happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does that make sense? You always have to seize, because it means you're trying to make something, you know, not understood, understood, but you have to know that what medium you use, then that will generally be the medium that others will try to explain it to. So you keep going until they can catch it. But, you know, just like Jiva Goswami is explaining to some disciples about that are worried about this morality issue, about Krishna and the gopis, that it's immoral. But then he shows, you know, how he explains that how they're his eternal energies. And so it's just, so that way, then they're eternally connected to him. So that means it is actually part of Swakya. But he's just meaning from the platform of Tattva. But in Rasa, it's Parakya.
Right.
But they don't catch that. So that, because their trouble is in the Rasa. So then they'll explain it like that. And then on the present day terms, then some individuals will say that Jiva Goswami, he's speaking things, he's changing things, he's speaking differently than the standard, and so therefore he set a precedent, therefore we can change the standards. But, you know, two mistakes are being made. First of all, are we Jiva Goswami? And if we are, then start changing away. And two is that he didn't change. He just explained it in Tattva, but they didn't catch it that way. But it made them peaceful, so now they're not going to criticize Krishna. Right? So, you know, better that. But then some will say, oh, you know, he says this, he says that, so there's contradiction, there's differences. So therefore, when there's contradiction, then what do you have to do? You have to go with the only authority you can trust, your own mind. And so therefore, then I will do it this way. You know? So that's the whole point, is there is no contradiction. It's just a particular angle. So sometimes you have to be careful when how the words are used, because majesty generally means that. But if you see the acharyas then do that, then you go ahead, and when they become confused, then you explain it. Like Gokul, they'll explain it to mean Gokul meaning Braja Vrindavan and Goloka, but they also means Gokul means when Braja Vrindavan comes to the material world. Because what comes to the material world? The Gokul part. So when it comes here, it's Gokul. But when it comes here, then this is known as Gokul, there is known as Goloka, or Goloka Vrindavan, or you know, like this. And so then you make the distinction, but it's still the same Goloka that comes. I mean, the Gokul that comes. And so sometimes devotees will get confused there. But that's how the acharyas are using it, so it just has to be explained. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
So you always have to watch that longer term, how do you say, tendency for deviation or misrepresentation, or
yeah.
You were going to say something?
Complications.
Complications, yes. Okay, thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanam. Today is Monday, right? So, yes, it's all right.
Tomorrow's a Paddy.
Oh, yeah, tomorrow's a Paddy. So I started off also the Bhishma Punch Up, right?
Yeah.
Because Saturday is the Deporti month.
Yeah.
Now you can see why the month is actually the Purnima's part of the month. So technically, Kartik month is not over on Saturday. But because the Vrata starts not on the Pratipat, it's on the Purnima. The Vrata is over on the Purnima.
Yeah.
So that's when it switches for the next one. If you're just following the general, you know, like that. So that means. And just thinking, the South Indians can get out their doses again.
Right? Oh, Uradal.
Yeah. This is a major thing. You know? I mean, they get hit most of any community, right? 1 month no yogurt, 1 month no Uradal. That's like, you know, that would be like, you know, 1 month no rice for Bengalis or something.
People don't survive.
Yeah, they won't survive. You know? No bread. Yeah, no bread. Yes. Yeah. So, but if you follow the Pandava Panchak, then you follow up until sunset. You know, it means the twilight's over, the sunset, and it gets dark, like now, following the Vrata, and then after that, then you break the Vrata. But before that, you follow the fifth part of the Panchak. So for those who want to follow that, because you can follow Bhishma Pancha, is that during those 5 days, whatever you would have liked to have done for the whole 4 months, but you couldn't, you can do during those 4 or 5 days. Just don't do the one no water. There is absolutely no vrata of not drinking any water. Even though some will do it, it's extremely dangerous, and as Krishna says in the Super Soul, you're parching the Super Soul. So don't do that one, even though it may be popular. Do all the other ones you want to do. But some do it. They just 5 days. Total nirjal.
Wow.
Like that. But you could, it means, technically, you can die, because 3 days is the standard. If you don't drink water, you can die in 3 days. But they stretch it to five. Somehow they survive. But it's not anywhere one of the vratas that's there. You know, unless you're from one of the ages where, you know, you don't have to eat or drink, you know, stuff like that. Then you can do it. But it's not one of the 44 vratas or the extended ones that are there.
We're not planning.
Okay. Because it was one of the things that some would do it in Vrindavan. Some would even then say, no, you got to do this, or, you know, yeah, so.
The vrata is not complete if you don't do Ganga Snan and...
do Ganga Snan.
And if you offer...
but do you want to take it this far?
Bhishma?
No, but you want to take it this far, because if you really want to get into it, then it's not complete unless you also practice the Mag and the Vaishak bathings during those months. So in other words, just... be happy with Bhishma Pancha. Okay? And if you want to do that, you do that. You know that, you do that, that's in your practices, that's a very standard thing, then you do it for yourself, but don't propagate it. Because as it is, we're just happy if people just don't eat urdal. You know what I'm saying?
Said about opulences is Aishwarya, majesty is what thing? I'm looking for the term.
It's just another thing. Majesty means just the display of opulences. It's a grand display of opulences. So that's majesty. So it includes the awe and reverence. It includes, you know, that kind of thing. Grandeur. So all these are.
Thank you.